So a couple of months ago, Marshall and I got to go to the Vineyard's regional conference down in Grand Junction. And it was an amazing experience. We met so many cool people. We got to do some pretty fun activities along the way. But there is one event in particular that kind of made a lasting impact for us. And that was that we got to meet with one of the lead pastors of a vineyard in Grand Junction and just talk about our church, our heart, our vision, what's going on. And when we were having coffee with him, we're sitting down in a little cafe, you know, sipping our drinks, kind of lean forwards, and he asks us, what is your vision for Loveland Vineyard Community? And I kind of launch into an answer, talking about all the stuff I'm passionate about, the calling that we've heard from God, the impact we want to have on the city, all of our ideas. And the longer I continue on, the more he looks at me like I'm talking to him like this guy. And the longer I talked, the more I felt like this guy. It's all connected, you see? You know, love God, love people. It's all there. It's all connected. So we left the conference feeling super encouraged and also with a mission. We had to condense and articulate the vision, the heart of this church. And that's what we've done. We have spent the last several months pouring into this work, pressing into God. We've asked hard questions. We've gotten feedback. We've made adjustments. We've put things into language until we ended up with a one-page, front and back, but one-page summary of what makes Loveland Vineyard uniquely special. If you take one of those things out, it's just not the same. That was kind of our synopsis of what we are. And so if you're ever talking to somebody and you're like, yeah, I go to Loveland Vineyard, and they go, what on earth is that? Do you have an answer? Or is yours kind of scattered like mine? Oh, it's just a church, or, oh yeah, we do all this, and over here, and over there. So we're in this series where we're talking about triune church. And really, Loveland Vineyard is comprised of three things. Here you can find a place to belong, an environment to grow, and a purpose to share. So if somebody asks you, what is Loveland Vineyard? What makes that special? What are you going to tell them? At Loveland Vineyard, you can find a place to belong, environment to grow, and a purpose to share. Those are the three things. If you walk away with anything from our series, just remember those. So we just recognized Steve and Sunshine for their awesome, awesome work in Dare to Lead. And one of the things that we had to do in that course was narrow down our values. So she had this long list of potential values, and you could only pick two, which is brutally hard to do. I'm like, that sounds good. I'll take one of those. That sounds nice. Had to narrow it down to only two. And the ones that I ended up picking are love and growth. So I think it's safe to say that I'm super excited to be talking about our second distinctive, environment to grow. Something super important to me, a value I have, so, so meaningful, has absolutely changed my life, influences the way I do things. So I'm not going to tell you that my perspective on growth is original, but I've also never had anyone articulate it to me the way that I kind of see it or articulate the value for it. So growth is usually perceived as cutting things out and losing parts of yourself. Something bad happens and you throw your hands up and go, I'm never going to do that again. Don't do that. Won't touch that. That was bad. Avoid it at all costs. Whereas I think growth is actually more about becoming wholehearted. It's restoring parts of yourself. It's about discovering freedom. So here's kind of an example of what I'm talking about. On the same trip down to the Vineyard Regional Conference, I was really running late. Marshall and I were in the car together, and I was not at all ready. You know, we kind of threw the bags in last minute, and so we're driving down, we're kind of processing some things, and I said, is it okay for me to put on makeup while we're in the car driving down? You know, I know we're talking, are you going to feel like I'm distracted, not listening if I put on makeup? And he says, oh, no, that's totally fine. Like, go ahead and do that. So I'm putting on makeup, and we're talking, and he's sharing some things that are vulnerable and some things that we're processing through and even struggling with. And finally, it gets to the point where he says something along the lines of, like, you know, I don't feel heard. I don't feel listened to. And something in my head just kind of, like, snaps. Something breaks a little bit. And I am not proud of it, but I did the whole stuffing things back in my bag, you know, being noisy, zipping it up, throwing it on the ground and saying, okay, I'm listening now. Are you happy? And it wasn't actually about that. We were able to engage in conversation about it because Marshall's amazing, very gracious. He didn't leave his school with me, even though I was being dramatic. And we talked about it, and we were able to kind of get down to the root of what was happening and what he actually needed from me. And the more we talked, the more it wasn't about me putting on makeup while he was talking. It was more needing reflection and questions and validation and things like that. But some part of my brain, next time I pulled out that makeup bag, thought, I can't do makeup in front of Marshall. It's unsafe. It's not okay. That was what caused our problem. Just avoid at all costs. And it's not actually about the makeup bag. That's not something that I have to tear out of my life. I can't ever put on makeup in front of Marshall again because that was the problem. No, the real problem was the communication that was happening, his expectations that I didn't know or wasn't meeting, the things that I was distracted by. So it's not about carving out chunks. It's not about tearing out pieces, saying, no, no, no. A growth mindset isn't, you did something bad, don't ever do it again. It's about connection, what involves other people. It's about touching base with your values and determining whether or not you're living within them or outside of them. It's about understanding how you want things to go next time, about figuring out how you want to show up as your best self, and then taking real steps to make that happen. So when I focus on growth, I'm more focused on where I'm going, the freedom, the strength, and the joy that comes on the other side over what I'm losing. So instead of, oh, I'm going to never do makeup in front of him again, and that will solve all the problems, it's how can I be there better to support him? How can our relationship grow and prosper through this experience? What does he need? What do I need? How can I better take care of myself so that I can show up the way I want to for him? And believe me, I am by no means perfect at this. Even though I kind of understand the concepts, even though I have a value for it, I still struggle and I absolutely mess up on a regular basis. Maintaining a growth mindset is hard, hard work. I wish I could tell you that it was just memorize a couple easy steps. I wish I could say, write a Bible verse up on your mirror, and once you see that, it'll fix all your problems. But growth is painful. It's hard. It's messy. But it's always so, so incredibly worth it. Let's take a peek at an example of growth in the Bible. And I think one of the greatest examples of growth is the transformation from Saul to Paul. Pretty big change, pretty big growth transformation there. So after Paul encounters God, he heads up to Jerusalem to tell of his experience. And when he gets there, the Jewish leaders stir up the crowd, and people literally drag him out of the temple to kill him. Like, they are actively in trying to murder this man. Word gets out, and the commanding officer took soldiers out to investigate, and they literally are, like, dragging people off of him. They're trying to beat Paul to death. And the officer allows Paul to address the crowd. So here's Paul's account of kind of his transformation. And this is found in Acts 22, 4 through 21. So if you have a Bible, if you want to whip it out and turn on your phone, whatever that looks like, we'll also have it up on the screen. That's Acts 22. 4 through 21. Paul says this, "I persecuted this way, even to the point of death. tying up both men and women and putting them in prison, as both the high priest and the whole council of elders can testify about me. From them, I also received letters to the brothers in Damascus, and I was on my way to make arrests there and bring the prisoners to Jerusalem to be punished. As I was en route near Damascus, about noon, a very bright light from heaven suddenly flashed around me. Then I fell to the ground and heard a voice saying to me, "Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me?" I answered, "Who are you, Lord?" He said to me, "I am Jesus, the Nazarene, whom you are persecuting." Those who were with me saw the light, but did not understand the voice of the one who is speaking to me. So I asked, "What should I do, Lord?" The Lord said to me, "Get up and go to Damascus. There you will be told about everything that you have been designated to do." Since I could not see because of the brilliance of that light, I came to Damascus led by the hand of those who were with me. A man named Ananias, a devout man according to the law, well spoken of by all Jews who lived there, came to me and stood behind me and said to me, "Brother Saul, regain your sight." And at that very moment, I looked up and I saw him. Then he said, "The God of our ancestors has already chosen you to know his will, to see the righteous one and to hear a command from his mouth, because you will be his witness to all people of what you have seen and heard. And now, what are you waiting for? Get up, be baptized, and have your sins washed away, calling on his name." When I returned to Jerusalem and I was praying in the temple, I fell into a trance and I saw the Lord saying to me, "Hurry up and get out of Jerusalem quickly, because they will not accept your testimony about me." I replied, "Lord, they themselves know that I imprisoned and beat those in various synagogues who believed in you. And when the blood of your witness Stephen was shed, I myself was standing nearby, approving and guarding the cloaks of those who were killing him." Then he said to me, "Go, because I will send you far away from to the Gentiles." So pretty big transformation. Went from killing Christians to becoming one and spreading the news. And we see Paul engage in what I'm going to call our four C's of growth. So these are four skills to create and participate in an environment of growth. And they look something like this. So it starts out with courage. It takes courage to see and engage in an opportunity for growth. And when we see something that's out of alignment with God's heart, we become susceptible to things like shame and disappointment. The way we deal with that, the kind of cure, is curiosity and compassion. Then we finish with control, because being aware of the problem is only part of the solution. We need to be aware of the problem, but we also need to do something about it. So we want to follow up with real, lasting change. So you got courage, leads into curiosity and compassion, which leads into control. So we're going to talk more kind of in depth about each of these skills. In each of these, we're going to go over what I'm calling behavioral goals. And I kind of want to clarify what this means before we get there. So behavioral goals are not a list of shoulds. You should do this. And if you don't, you better feel guilty. It's not new rules to promote a legalistic culture. We don't want that. That seems awkward. Instead, they're simply tools to help us see if we are living within our values. So they are first-person statements about our behavior that helps us move from the theoretical to the practical. So as we move forward, I want you to kind of look at each of these behavior statements and try and figure out, is that accurate for where you're at? Is that where you're moving towards? Or you're like, "Wow, I wasn't even aware of that, but I want to be there." And there are behavioral statements that are, like I said, first person, because this is not a sermon for someone else to hear. This is a sermon for you to invest and to figure out, where do I fit in the spectrum of behavioral goals? So let's start with our first C, which is courage. Growth takes courage and acknowledging that something needs to change. So acknowledging that we did something out of alignment with our values that we didn't show up to a conversation the way we wanted to, that we wronged a brother or sister. Actually acknowledging that really sucks. It is not a good time. It can physically manifest in us, in like a knot in our stomach. Maybe you feel like your face flush a little bit, feel tense. I definitely want to like physically get smaller and shrink into oblivion. I don't want anyone to see me because I'm so filled with shame. So it's not a pleasant experience. It takes courage to step into something that we know is going to be unpleasant. It's an easy way to, I guess it's much easier to tell ourselves stories of how the other person's wrong, right? It's easier to be like, they're wrong than I'm wrong. We might even convince ourselves that the other person deserved it. We might try to minimize or maximize what we've done. But all of these things are trying to push the problem away. It's not acknowledging our role in it. So our first behavioral goal is, I choose courage over comfort by facing difficult tasks and conversations rather than avoiding them. So Paul shows tremendous courage in acknowledging his mistakes. He admits, I was there when Stephen died. I watched their cloaks while they killed him. He does not minimize his impact, what he had done. He owns it. And then he engages in hard conversations and faces the difficult tasks that God instructed him. He went to a place that he knew they would want to kill him. I mean, talk about hard conversations. Paul was facing not only social rejection, but even death. And they did try to kill him. So he is one of now the most renowned authors of the New Testament. He engaged in that hard thing, and God had a destiny for him. He had a place for him to end up. And we might not be facing the same like literal life and death situation that Paul's in, but sometimes we're facing the potential death of something. And I know that sounds dramatic, but engage with me for a moment. Humor me. How many times have you skipped a hard conversation because you were scared that it was going to be the end of a relationship? It's the death of a relationship. How many times have you avoided it because you're scared of being kicked out of a social group? It's the death of a friend network. How many times have we skipped doing the hard thing because you could even lose your job over it? Just like Paul, what future, what destiny are we missing out on because we're too scared to engage in the hard work of life-changing growth? The second behavioral goal for courage is this. I'm able to reality check the assumptions I tell myself during conflict, disappointment, and setback. So whether we realize it or not, we are constantly trying to make sense of the world around us. Our brain is seeing clues, it's seeing pieces of things, and it will fill in the rest. We really hate being in kind of like cognitive dissonance or in the tension of not knowing things. Our brain will just try and fill in the gaps. We also do this in times of conflict. And we especially do this when we're struggling with our identity. So we will tell ourselves stories in our head about what is happening. So remember the makeup bag story? There is an assumption that I was making. The story that I was telling myself in my head was, Marshall's being unfair. He's going back on what we talked about. He thinks I'm distracted and not listening. So if this isn't good enough, then I'm not good enough. And if this is all I can show up to the conversation with, then I will never be a good enough listener. I will never be what he needs, and he deserves someone better than me. Seems like a long way to jump, right? But it's what we tell ourselves. We can easily work ourselves into that sort of story. We're telling ourselves about assumptions or gaps that we're filling in. So engaging in courage looking at the situation as an opportunity for growth, opens the door to things like shame and disappointment. I ended up with the makeup bag telling myself, I will never be enough for him. That is the voice of shame talking. So shame, if we regularly consume it, if we regularly let it live in our lives, is a poison, and it will absolutely kill your mind, your spirit, and even your body. So what do we do when we have that poison? The cure, the antidote, is curiosity and courage. So those are our next two C's. Curiosity and compassion. Failure will happen in our lifetime. Romans 3:23 says, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. It's not a matter of if, it's when. So we need to be able to be prepared to kind of fight the shame and the disappointment gremlins that'll come and attack us. We need to be ready because, again, we know that we will someday encounter them. It's not if, it's when. So our first tool to fight back is curiosity. And the first behavioral goal for curiosity is, I stay curious with myself and others. I mean, that seems easy enough, right? Not too bad. But how many of you have messed up and immediately went, what am I feeling right now? Can I name my emotion? Where is this showing up in my body? How is this affecting my actions? What other things are going on that I need to be mindful of? What might the other party be going through that can affect the situation? Anyone immediately think that? Because I certainly don't. Most of us kind of make up a story, like I talked about, and then we cling to it. I'm really bad about putting things on repeat in my head. I'll replay the situation over and over and over again, either try to, like I said earlier, justify, blame, anything that pushes it off from me. That's not really showing up with curiosity, though. True curiosity means breaking habits. We can know the right things to do. We can even have a value for it. But if we don't build habits that help put that in place, we're going to really, really struggle with being curious in the midst of conflict. It takes time, and it takes intentionality. So our second behavioral goal for curiosity is I ask questions rooted in curiosity when I am unsure of something. So Paul asks great questions when he's confronted by God. He asks, who are you, Lord? He's open to it being someone other than his preconceived notion. He hears that it's Jesus, and he accepts that. He asks him, what shall I do? It's open to moving forward and genuinely wants a response back. So I talked about curiosity means building habits, and reliably asking questions is one of those habits we can put in place to build a curious mindset. And I want to talk real quickly about the difference between questions rooted in curiosity and aggressive questions. So let's say that Marshall came home from work one day and he was like super frustrated, super tired. He comes home and he just says, oh my gosh, I just had the worst day. Now, I can ask him two questions. The first can be, oh yeah, what made it so bad? And the second one I can ask is, oh yeah, do you want to talk about it? Which of those felt like a curious question? Which felt like an aggressive question? The first one was our aggressive one. It did not feel good when somebody's like, oh yeah, what made it that way? Oh yeah, well, my day was worse. You know, you're like ready for them to pounce on you. How about this? The questions we ask ourselves, because it's not, we want to ask curious questions to others, but we want to stay curious with ourselves. So make a bag situation. Right? I could ask myself, what do I need in order to show up as my best self? Or I can ask, why am I like this? Which of those felt curious? Which of those felt aggressive? So curious questions do not put the other person, the person that you're asking the question to, on defense. They do not trap the other person. They are not used to manipulate the situation. That is one I am so guilty of, where I'll try and ask people questions and get them cornered, and aha, I've proved my point now. But curiosity, curious questions, are meant to further understand others, to understand the situation, and to understand yourself. So we talked about curiosity. Let's talk about compassion. Our behavior for that is I treat myself and others with grace after a disappointment, failure, or mistake. Treat myself and others with grace after a disappointment, failure, or mistake. One of the things I had to do in order to start engaging in compassion with myself, and it seems weird or even backwards, but I had to mourn the things that didn't work for me anymore. The things that I was moving away from, I had to sit there and go, I'm losing this. I have to mourn it so that I can say goodbye. I had kind of a really cool experience with this while gardening. So when you're repotting a plant, you kind of dig out your original plant, or you get it from the nursery, you know, you take it out. One of the things you have to do is you have to break open the roots so that when you put it in a new pot, it's set up to grow and expand. And if you don't do that, they just stay clustered and they stay stuck and they grow in on themselves and your plant dies. And I realized that I had developed all of these sort of like survival techniques, some coping mechanisms, where in that pot, in that first situation, I needed to survive. They were good. They kept me growing. They kept me healthy. They kept me just persisting. But then when we move into a new environment, when the situation changes, we have to break some of those things apart. We have to re-loose some of those. And it's not to say that they were bad and that we should feel ashamed that we ever did them. It's just not what works for us now. So we want to break away from that shame of, I can't believe I did this too. Thank you for serving me in this moment. And now I'm going to do something different. The other thing that makes compassion hard is that sometimes we misunderstand grace as saying, it's okay. But true compassion is not actually telling others in every situation, oh, it's okay. Don't worry about it. So Marshall and I try to get lunch together most days of the week, and I send him a little message on Slack, you know, saying, packing up at the church, heading over to pick you up. And sometimes he's stuck in a meeting, he has other things going, he has one bug that he's like, oh my gosh, I just need to fix this one thing and then I can relax and go to lunch. And he'll message me as I'm waiting in the parking lot, and he'll say, you know, oh, I'm sorry, I'm going to be a little bit late, something caught me. And I reply back, it's okay. Don't worry about it. And this happened for weeks, if not months. And then finally one day my air conditioner has been on the fritz. And, you know, we were talking about it. And I actually forget how it happened. We were talking at night, I think, one time. And I was like, you know what? I just really appreciate it if you came down on time and if I wasn't waiting in the parking lot, because it's really hard when I'm circling around and there's no air conditioner and I'm overheating and it's just really miserable. And the more we talked about it, the more he's like, where is this coming from? Oh my gosh. You texted me that it was okay. And I had to confront myself and be like, I did say it was okay. And it really wasn't. You're right. I did not mean the thing that I told you. And I have to catch myself constantly when I've been hurt and somebody comes up and either apologizes or wants to talk about it. My gut instinct is to say, it's okay. And so we have this rule when we apologize together that you are not allowed to say, it's okay. What you say instead is, thank you. Thank you for apologizing. I accept that and I hold that. And then when you're ready to forgive, you can either come back and talk about, you know, I forgive. Sometimes you're ready to forgive right off the bat and you can say, I forgive you. But we never want to say, it's okay. Because it's not. If you were hurt, if that was a bad thing, we don't want to go on saying that, that it's okay. So compassion is being able to sit in the tension of, yeah, that wasn't okay, and I still like you, and we're still okay. So our last skill that we're going to talk about today, our last C, is control. Because everything we talked about before is great, right? It's so necessary. It's so important. We need to be able to invest in that courage, curiosity, compassion, and it can't stop there. We have to understand what is and what is not within our control and follow through with meaningful, lasting change. So our behavior for control is this. I take responsibility for my own recovery after a disappointment, failure, or mistake. And I think we're actually going to read both of these together. So our second behavior goal for control is this. I'm able to reset after setbacks rather than staying stuck in emotion. So Paul followed through. He didn't get stuck. He didn't go, oh my gosh, I've done all these terrible things. I'm a horrible person. And then just not do anything about it. He changed. He learned new things. He adapted. I mean, heck, his name changed from Saul to Paul as a reflection of his inner transformation. He stopped killing Christians and instead started evangelizing. There is notable outside perspective looking at him going, something's different. Something has changed. So we use curiosity and compassion to kind of move past that shame and disappointment, which makes it possible for us to own our own recovery and our own reset. One of the hardest things is that it is not another person's job to manage our emotions and help us regulate. That is what's within our control. It's owning our own shame, owning our own disappointment, and moving forward. And vice versa, we cannot rescue other people and their inner state. So if you come up to somebody and say, hey, this thing you did really hurt me. I really need either an apology or future action, something's changed. And their response is, I'm such a horrible person. I can't believe I did that. You probably don't love me. You don't want to be around me anymore. It is okay to let them know, I'm going to let you feel. Your feelings are valid, and this is not what I need in this situation. I need to step away, let you feel it out, and then when we're ready to talk, we can talk about it together. But it's not your job to go dive in and rescue them from that emotion. So looking back, I'm going to put up a kind of blank map of our four C's, and I'm curious to see, can you guys help me fill in our four C's of growth? So our first one, when we want to engage in growth, the first thing we have to do is we have to have courage. Yay, awesome. The second thing, when we engage in courage, we often are attacked by the gremlins of shame and disappointment. Nicely done. All right, so how do we beat those gremlins back? How do we fight those? What's the cure to that poison? It's going to be nailed it. And then we have to follow through because all of that's great, but it doesn't mean anything unless we put it into action. So we have control right on. So we're going to actually have the band come back up and do some worship. And I think one of the most important things about stepping into this growth mindset is you have to want it. You need to want to grow. It's fine to know all these skills. It's good to be aware of the behavioral goals that we have. But unless you truly want to change, you're going to stay stuck. Yes, we have some squirrels on the roof. Oh, boy. Yeah, there you go. squirrels or raccoons, yeah. So there's the story of the man at the pool of Bethesda. Jesus comes up to him and he asks him, "Do you want to be made well?" And I think so often we look at that and we think, well, of course I want to be made well. Of course he should want to be made well, right? Seems like the obvious answer. But when it comes to actually looking in and seeing, do I want to move from this thing to this thing? It can be hard. Again, we have to mourn things. We have to recognize the parts of ourselves that we maybe don't like. And then we also have to figure out, what the heck are we moving towards? If you don't have good examples in your life, if you feel like you're all alone in some situations, it can be hard to figure out, what is the thing that I want? What am I moving towards? It can be difficult. And sometimes we come upon an opportunity for growth and we just say, no, I'm not there yet. I am not ready. And actually, that's okay. If you're in a place where you're like, there is an opportunity for growth that I am just not ready to step into, that I'm not ready to take, then maybe you need to spend some more time just belonging. We talked about how the series, the Place to Belong, Environment to Grow, Purpose to Share, are all reflections of our belonging in the Father, our identity in Jesus, and our destiny through the Holy Spirit. And those are all cyclical things. We move through those. We have to find a place to belong before we can grow and learn about our identity, before we can go and do. And if we try and do those things backwards, it's really unhealthy. We end up frustrated. Other people around us end up frustrated. So if you're in a place right now where, like I said, I was talking and you're like, that all sounds great, I am not there, that is okay. That just means that that's that kind of mental signal, that little flag that says maybe you need to belong first. And then we can kind of dive into, why is it that you don't feel like you belong? Where can we help you belong? So I'm just going to pray. And we're just going to ask God what he's up to. So, Holy Spirit, we just welcome you right now. Would you begin to reveal to us where we are in this cycle? Whether there's things that we need to engage with you in. Opportunities for growth. Things that you're calling us upwards and to that we just aren't aware of. Or maybe we need your help being courageous and engaging in those. But as we sit here, would you just begin to bring to mind things that you would have us grow in? Whether that's how we show up during conflicts, if that's relationships that we're in, if that's things that we're doing that aren't healthy and aren't good for us. So you bring those to mind right now. As we sit there in those things that you've brought up for us, those moments where you've been out of alignment with you, would you just show us your heart? Would you show us how you see things, how you see us? Lord, we just stand before you and we declare right now that we want to take ownership for those things, and that we want to bring ourselves back into alignment with you. That we want to be a part of your heart, that we want to do what you're doing. This is our declaration, that we want to be like you. And Lord, for anyone that just is not there yet, would you begin to really press in and show them what it means to truly belong. Help us feel safe in your presence, O Lord. Bring safety to our communities. But in everything we do it all for you. Come meet us here, Lord.